It's time for Amy Simon of She's History, the most dangerous women in American history, then and now.
Oh, boy. All right. Welcome back. Nicole Sandler here. And boy, are women under attack. It is just amazing. Before we get into some of these stories that I've pulled together, let's welcome Amy Simon to the show. Good morning, Amy.
Oh, I wish it were a good morning. Hello, darling.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I just call me punching bag. Forget Nicole. I'm no longer Nicole. It's just like, yeah, keep hitting me. It's what do they say? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I don't know anymore.
Superwoman.
Don't know anymore. Don't know anymore. I'm telling you, just, oh God, there are some days I just want to crawl back in bed and pull the covers over my head. I know, look, Michelle Obama yesterday tweeted out a photo. Here, I'm putting it up on Ustream. It's her standing in a room in the White House with a sign with a hashtag, bring back our girls. You know, this story out of Nigeria is just unfucking believable. And, you know, the fact is the media didn't pay attention until this hashtag took off.
Yeah. Well, correct. Again, the media didn't, but there has been, you know, outrage. I know Nicholas Kristof, you know, he wrote that Half the Sky. He's a real advocate of girls globally being killed and abused. And he wrote something in the New York Times back in May 3rd. But the truth is, we have not been paying attention, as usual, and they were abducted April 14th.
April 14th
is when this happened.
Yeah, and we, the U.S. media, just finally stood up and took notice, you know, in the last couple of days.
That's because of social media.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I knew about it, and I feel guilty because I've just, you know, I usually love to come on your show and research my stories and talk about fabulous females. This was the hardest thing I ever worked on. And but we have to.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the fact that it's been going on for several weeks, and even Nicholas Kristof, who I just spoke of, said, you know, our media's focus on the Malaysian airliner, which, of course, is important. I mean, that we should have been focusing on these poor Nigerian girls.
Yes.
And, you know, as I've been doing my research, our government has been aware of Boko Haram. And just, I guess, to give a little bit of background for the listeners, who are these people? I never heard of Boko Haram.
No.
And they're terrorists. They're Islamic Orthodox militants.
But let me just say, you know, they do not represent Islam. I mean, I know a lot of Muslim people who obviously are as mortified by this as we are, if not more, because this is, they're saying, you know, they're putting this under the mantle of their religion. Even Al-Qaeda has disavowed these people, saying you know, we don't do that. So these are just, they're criminals. It's like organized crime in Nigeria.
Yes. You know, it's not unusual. I mean, there's always been factions people have always hijacked religious groups, a small faction, and you know, tried to undermine what they were really about. But the thing about this group, this Boko Haram, and apparently they've been doing this for about 5 years, what they're actually trying to overthrow the government. They want to create an Islamic state. I mean, Boko Haram actually means no Western education. That's kind of the actual literal, you know, meaning of their name.
Let's look at this, because what they said, look, I don't believe anything they say, but what they're saying is they kidnapped these girls because they were at a school and girls shouldn't be educated. Instead, they kidnapped them with the goal, they say, of selling them into marriage, breed slavery. And think back just a few years, and our little friend, Malala, who was shot in the head because she was going to school.
But see, the thing about this group, Boko Haram, is it was a government-run school. And that's why it was such a target for them, because they are incensed that the government of the country that they are living in are letting girls be educated. Their whole thing is that girls should not be educated. Western society, they're trying to overthrow Western society in their own country. And because these girls were going to a government-run school. Yes, any kind of education. But they're against their own government. They're trying to overthrow their government, and this is one of the ways they're doing it. Just I saw this morning on the news, they went into Cameroon, on the border of Cameroon yesterday, and killed over 100 people. They're big men, they're big bullies, they have tons of weapons, and they're kind of unstoppable, which is what is so absolute. And the fact, you know, the another thing I have to talk about this, because as I did the research, I learned about it, you know, there's this big economic forum summit going on right now there.
In Nigeria?
So, yes.
Oh, my
this
God.
Is, I'm watching, you know, and finally, you know, the story's all over the news, and it led the news this morning on, and it led the news last night, the news. Watching, we don't really watch. However, I'm happy to say it's finally getting attention. Andrea Mitchell was reporting that, and this is the exact quote, it's in a striking contrast, Nigeria's capital is hosting the World Economic Forum, which is the world's most wealthiest corporate leaders.
Wow.
That's been planned now, and that's why I think another reason that there's so much attention on it now is because obviously the country has been preparing for this little summit. This little forum, and not paying, not trying to find these girls. And I didn't know that this was and excuse my ignorance, listeners who know more than I didn't know Nigeria was an oil-rich country. Mm. And whenever you see those words, you know what the hell is going on.
No, you do.
Same thing with what's going on with the Sultan of Brunei.
Well,
you know, it's
I'm
another,
glad you brought
when
that
you have
up.
Money, money talks.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. Because the Sultan of Brunei, by the way, Brunei, a country that has the population of, what, you know, maybe the city that I live in. I mean, it's a tiny little country, right?
It's not the people that makes that country what it is.
No,
it
isn't. It's the oil. But the Sultan of Brunei has been, you know, has had private meetings with the president. I mean, President Obama, the presidents you can name. Well, here's from America Blog. Let me just share a little bit of this with you. The Beverly Hills Hotel, that iconic pink building, we've passed it a million times. I actually interviewed Yoko Ono there once, right? The Beverly Hills Hotel is finding itself in the middle of a political and media firestorm after human rights activists learned that the posh Hollywood venue is owned by the Sultan of Brunei, a man who just instituted Sharia law, whereby women will be flogged for having abortions and gays will be stoned to death. It all began with the Gill Action Fund canceling a conference at the hotel. Next up, the Feminist Majority Foundation pulled its annual Global Women's Rights Award, co-chaired by Jay and Mavis Leno. Then the Motion Picture and Television Fund yanked its glitchy Oscar party. The Hollywood Reporter canceled its Women in Entertainment breakfast. Actor Stephen Fry canceled his reservations and announced a boycott, and so on.
Right.
You see, the Beverly Hills Hotel is part of the Dorchester Collection, which is owned by the Brunei Investment Agency, which is controlled by the Sultan himself. They also own a bunch of other hotels around, in the U.S. and in Europe. But, the Sultan of Brunei decided they'll implement Sharia law. And it's amazing. It's amazing. And I'm glad, you know, finally that people are speaking out against it. But, you know, the Sultan of Brunei is accorded the same, privileges in terms of access to the president as other heads of state. Seriously?
That's gotta stop. The reason this whole thing started to happen, and it was the feminist majority that planned the boycott and really brought this out into the open, is because a few days before this happened, the Sultan of Brunei instituted a new set of laws, doing the stoning and, all the stuff that we're hearing about. But, you know, Sharia, it's all about Sharia law. Sharia actually means path in Arabic. And what Sharia law actually is, and I've, heard about it for years, is it's a set of regulations pertaining to marriage, divorce, inheritance, and custody.
Uh-huh.
Those are the four real major issues. And I guess it was last week before this happened that they instituted this new set where they were going to stone gay and lesbians, and if a woman had an abortion, they were going to put her to death. So they've instituted a death penalty. So they've just increased, they've made it worse, and the feminist majority got on it, and everybody, jumped on it too. But, I saw an interview with the chief executive officer, which we just love those. His name is Christopher Cowdrey, and he is the chief executive of this Dorchester group.
Okay.
And he was being interviewed, and he's defending it. And the interviewer was saying, do you agree with this? And he said, I have no comment. It's just, as you would say all the time, it is stunning, because if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And how can any decent, moral human being work for any organization that supports this kind of activity?
Right.
Money.
Yeah, right.
Money, money, money,
well,
money,
and
money,
look,
money.
And there, Amy, therein lies the problem, because,
yep.
Look, I hate to say this, and it would never happen in a million years, but if somebody from Clear Channel called me tomorrow or today or whenever and said, hey, we want to give you a show, I would take it, because right now, you know, our economic
survival needs. It's
survival.
About survival.
It is about survival. And I don't know anybody who's in a position now to turn down paying work.
Well, that's, again, therein lies the problem, because if you want to take a stand, you know that there's 20,000 people behind you that are going to jump right in, and the employers know that. So we're just being held hostage on every level. It's just, however, on a more positive note, we are coming together as a world. Globally, we are coming together. I mean, front page of the LA Times today started talking about, you know, what's happening. And we are, I guess we've been offering our assistance, talking now about Nigeria. We've been offering our assistance. Hillary Clinton's been out there talking about it. Obviously, Michelle Obama, Malala. I mean, there is worldwide outrage. And now we're sending people over there. But I'm going to read you a little quote here that I read in the paper today that kind of blew me away. Terrorist groups like Boko Haram and Al-Qaeda in the Islamic whatever have been gaining strength, and we must not allow a safe haven to develop from which these groups can plan and launch attacks. And this is Dianne Feinstein, who's on the Senate Intelligence Committee. But I guess the State Department listed the group as a foreign terrorist group back in November, and they've known about them since 2011. I don't know what to think about it, Nicole, because it's not our country. I mean, half the time we go around saying, is it our job as America to go around, you know, saving the world? I mean, every country has, we've had this discussion, you've had it a million times on your show, and I really don't know how to approach it, because when you see stuff like this going on, is it our place to go in there and try to help? I guess we've been trying to help the Northern African government, and they're finally accepting our help starting yesterday, according to all the reports in the papers. We're sending drones. There's, you know, things going on. We're actually going over there. But I mean, how do you look at that?
Yeah,
we've known about this since 2011.
Yes, that is the that's the issue. You know, we are not the world's police. I feel horribly for the people in Syria who are being murdered and tortured by their government. I feel sorry for the people in South Sudan who are being
slaughtered. I mean, we could just go all over the world.
Right.
And what it's just this horrible, helpless feeling. What is our role?
Yeah, I don't, you know what? This is where the United Nations should come in. This is where NATO should come in. I'm sorry. That's what these organizations are there for. It shouldn't be up to us to take the lead. But boy, when something like this happens, the UN should be right there with forces to help find these girls. These are young girls. They're 15 to 18 years old. We both have daughters
so
in that age group, and they've been stolen. They've been kidnapped. And, you know, the terrorists, the criminals who kidnapped them are saying we're going to sell them into marriage, which is human trafficking for $12 a person. I mean, the whole thing is just so stunning, so sickening.
You know,
but can I tell you?
And who are they selling them to? I mean, there's the other side of that. You know, it's such a giant, huge issue. It's not just these horrible terrorists who are selling the girls. It's like prostitution. You know, who's benefiting from this? The people that are buying these girls as slaves. You know, well, then we can have the whole talk about how human life is devalued.
Yep.
You know, I mean, how long ago was it that black, you know, slaves were considered 3/5 of a human? That wasn't really very long ago.
No, it wasn't. No, it
wasn't.
And,
you know, I mean, women only won the right to vote in 1920. And obviously, we are a super civilized country. There are many civilized countries that see them as equal. I mean, we're not being paid equally, and that's another subject. But in these little countries like this, I mean, they're just considered property. And women were considered property in our country for until the, you know, early 1900s.
That's right. And some people still consider us property. You know,
yeah, well, back in 1980, I used this quote in Chief History of the Play, and the audience is always blown away because I say, who said a wife in the workforce threatens the very structure of family life itself? And that was Ronald Reagan in 1980.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it's mind-blowing. It's stunning, as you say all the time, well, appropriately. So, yeah.
You know, and Amy, today, I mean, all over, on whether it was on Morning Jerk this morning as I was flipping through the dial, to, you know, clips on, you know, the Raw Story, Crooks and Liars, wherever I was looking this morning, the actual discussions on, you know, the problem when the woman in the family out-earns her husband.
Oh, I saw that, too.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I was sickened by it.
Because that's a problem, you know? And there's Mika Brzezinski, who, I'm sorry, out-earns her cameraman husband, probably by a few mil a year. and she's, said, you know, it's a real problem. Some men just can't handle it.
Right. It's such a deep-rooted, almost primal cultural problem that women are just not, you know, considered equal in so many areas. I don't know how to get to the bottom of it.
Well, here, I'm going to share something with you. Amy Simon is with us. I hope you don't mind. I'm keeping you on for a few extra minutes just because it goes on. Yesterday, did you know that there was a bill being debated in the House of Representatives to build a new women's museum on the Mall in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, I've known about it for years. Meryl Streep donated $1 million of her Iron Lady salary to help build this. Yes,
okay.
It's been a virtual museum, and
right,
we've been trying to get it physically built for years. Go on.
Right. Now, it would be privately funded. You mentioned Meryl Streep already donated $1 million, right? And so there was a vote, or there is a vote coming up in the House. And Michelle Bachmann gave an impassioned speech on the floor of the House, you know, because she's a woman. Hear her roar. I'm going to play you a little bit of it. You ready?
Oh, God.
Okay. From yesterday. Here we go. Michelle Bachmann.
There already are 20 women's museums in the United States, including one affiliated with the Smithsonian Museum, and including one right next to the United States Capitol. And so why would we be building another? I rise today in opposition to this bill because I believe ultimately this museum that will be built on the National Mall on federal land will enshrine the radical feminist movement that stands against the pro-life movement, the pro-family movement, and the pro-traditional marriage movement.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I am deeply concerned that worthy exhibits are clearly the exception and not the rule. A cursory view of the overall content already listed on the website shows an overwhelming bias toward women who embrace liberal ideology, radical feminism, and fails to paint an accurate picture of the lives and actions of American women throughout our history. Among the most troubling example is the museum's glowing review of the woman who embraced eugenics movement in the United States, Margaret Sanger.
She's
an abortion.
Right. Wait till you, because she goes on now for another minute about Margaret Sanger. Listen,
please.
Just listen to this. This is what happens when you keep cutting funding to education. Here we go.
Trailblazer, and she is the founder of Planned Parenthood, which this body has sought to defund. Yet the museum glosses
over. No, you have sought to defund Planned Parenthood, Michelle Bachmann. You and your fucking asshole Republicans, that body has not sought to defund it. You have, but I digress.
Yet the museum glosses over Margaret Sanger's avid support for sterilization of women and abortion and for the elimination of chosen ethnic groups, particularly African Americans and classes of people. I find Margaret Sanger's views highly offensive, and yet she is featured over and over again as a woman to extol on this website and ultimately in this museum.
Okay, sorry, that's all I can take. Yet Michelle Bachmann, there was to be an online exhibit for her, you know, giving birth to 5 children and taking 20 some odd in as foster children. But I object to her being in a museum about women. But if it's about women, it's about women. Amy Simon, you want to tell us about Margaret Sanger?
Oh, I'm so sad and disgusted by what I just heard.
Yeah.
I can't even
stand it. I thought you would be.
Well, Margaret Sanger was a nurse, and she worked in the Lower East Side of New York City in the early 1900s, and she saw what was happening with unplanned pregnancies, and she's mostly known because she was the mother of the birth control movement.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to jail, 13, 14 times. She would She was arrested under what was called the Comstock Law because she would print and publish and mail information about family planning. It's family planning.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so that's why they hate her, because she was the Antichrist to her, because she taught women about birth control. You know, she would go into these tenement houses in the Lower East Side, and these women would be suffering, and they would line up outside.
Amy, you're breaking up. Did you move?
Well, I'm on my landline.
Yeah,
I moved a little bit,
okay.
But can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, God. All right, I'll freeze right where I am.
Okay.
And the immigrants would line up outside the door with cake and food for a minute of her time, because they thought she had the secret, because she had been in Europe, where the rich European women had some sort of birth control that nobody knew about. So she saw a need and needed to fill it. I mean, she just wanted to help women plan their families. And that's why. And then there's this whole thing about eugenics. Yeah, she dabbled a little bit in understanding genetics and all that kind of stuff. And that's pathetic, as you said, because we're cutting funding of education.
Yep.
That's not really what she was about. That's what they're jumping on, you know, typically. That's what they're... Margaret Sanger is known for Planned Parenthood and birth control, not for messing around with genetic science.
Right, but that's...
That wasn't her big thing.
Michelle Bachmann, doesn't get what a fact is and what hyperbole is. And she's objecting to a woman's museum on the mall in D.C. Now, the National Mall is lined with museums, right? And she's objected because we already have plenty of those.
It's not a women's museum, which is a very general term. It's
right.
A women's history.
Yes, hello,
museum.
Which
That's
is
different.
What you do. And the reason Amy Simon started Roachie's History, does this play, is writing another version, takes it into schools, if schools, can bring her in, is because we don't learn enough about women's history in this country. All we ever learn about is, let's see, Florence Nightingale, Eleanor Roosevelt, Susan B. Anthony, although we really don't know too much about her.
Clara Barton. Amelia Earhart.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Five.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you say, there's a need to learn about the women who preceded us and who are working, for us today. And it's not like we don't need female heroes, because we've certainly got the anti-heroes, plenty of them. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, the last time I did the show, March Women's History Month, and again, it's almost insulting that, they set aside a month for us, but it just shows you, how bad we are that we have to make an effort just to show a little bit about it. So when I was doing the show for middle school in Beverly Hills, in March, and I always talk about Kim Kardashian. She's one of the bad role models. Why do we know more about Kim Kardashian than Abigail Adams? But the kids in the audience, they knew about Malala Yousafzai.
Oh, good.
And I was really thrilled about that because, the name of the show is She's History, the Most Dangerous Women in America Then and Now. And I try to show the women in history and the women today how we're still fighting for the same thing. And I talk about one of the women, Lucretia Mott, who was one of the first women in America to speak. She was one of the first preachers, and she was a Quaker, and the Quakers educated their women, and I talk about the Taliban, how the Taliban would just flip out over the Quakers back then, and that's what this whole Nigerian problem is, Western education. And I talk about how Lucretia Mott would not be silenced, and neither would Malala Yousafzai. And as soon as I showed her picture on the screen, they all knew who she was. And I said, she is? Oh, yes. And you can hear a pin drop when I tell her story, how she was shot on her school bus in Pakistan in 2012 because she wanted to go to school.
Uh-huh.
So I bring it up because I'm just digging and trying so hard to find little nuggets of positivity. And as our generation, my colleagues, even younger than I, become teachers, and the feminists from our generation are teachers, they're teaching more to the kids about women's history. It's still a tiny, tiny drop in the bucket. But when I did look at when my daughters were, learning about American history in the eighth grade, and I looked at the book, there was at least a chapter on women's history. Elizabeth Cady Stanton was in there.
Cool.
I mean, maybe she got a page out of the whole book. I mean, this isn't like Zim's book, which really tells you, the people's history of the United States.
Right.
But they did a whole thing on the Declaration of Sentiments, and which is at the first women's convention in 1848 in New York, when Elizabeth Cady Stanton asked for women's rights. And, I never heard about that when I was going to school,
no,
but my child did.
Cool.
So I am grateful for at least the one chapter. And yes, we've got an incredible amount of work to do. And I have to put this on my website. I'll ask your listeners to be patient because I got some beautiful letters from these kids. And they write what's called a free write, W-R-I-T-E. They have to do a report when you do it in assembly. The students have to write something about the assembly.
Uh-huh.
And the teacher forwarded me some of these letters, which made me cry of joy because they got it. And they wrote, you know, I can't understand why women still only earn only 77 cents to the man's dollar. That is not right. And why is it that we have to have a 15-year-old girl going around the country raising education about, you know, raising awareness about education for girls? I mean, these kids, they're 12, 13 years old, and they got it. I got through to them, and they were incensed. And that's kind of my goal, not just to bring awareness to, but I want these kids to get pissed off now
mm-hmm.
so that when they get older and they have power, they can continue to work on changing laws.
Good.
So they don't live in a world where in Nigeria they're
kidnapped.
You know, kids their age are yes. being abducted and sold into slavery. It's insane.
It is insane. There's more insanity, too. Look, we got to keep fighting. We got to keep fighting, pushing back against the insanity because, the alternative is saying, I give up. And I don't think any of us are ready to give up.
Okay, well, I'm going to see Elizabeth Warren tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Elizabeth Warren is in Los Angeles. She's on a book tour. And there's a group here called Writer's Block, B-L-O-C, where they interview women who authors. And her book is called A Fighting Chance,
mm-hmm.
appropriately. We know about that. I'm sure yep. your listeners know all about Elizabeth mm-hmm. Warren. And I am so excited. I need a big dose of hope. And she's such a fighter. I can't wait to sit in the audience and get some of her great energy.
Cool. Well, next week you'll tell us all about it, okay?
I will.
All right. Enjoy.
And happy Mother's Day, honey.
Oh, God, it's Mother's Day on Sunday.
Yeah.
Which
started as women marching in protest for peace. That's how it all started, but I'll talk about that another time.
Okay. Well, happy Mother's Day to you, too.
Thanks.
Boy, oh, boy. We could go for hours on that subject.
Yeah.
All right. Amy Simon, find her at shehistory.com. Thank you.